friends, welcome to Silo Busting. I'm your host, Mo Banjoko, a senior manager in the financial services consulting practice at EPAM. Coming from a country where credit cards are only available to the rich, I learned from an early age to save. You want to buy anything, you need to plan and save for it. If it was a major expense such as purchasing a car or a house, your best bet was still to save, as waiting was still preferable to taking out credit at ridiculous rates. So, I learned delayed gratification. Then I moved to Canada and was promptly informed about how I needed a credit card to begin building a credit score, learning to manage my finances effectively, and on learning that credit was bad and that I needed to use it properly was a new type of education for me. Theodora Lau, founder of Unconventional Ventures, looks at financial literacy and the gap that still exists today in the knowledge most people have about managing their finances. By and large, banks today are focused on encouraging savings, and their financial literacy outreach seems tied primarily to the products and services they seek to sell. As one might expect, this approach does not gain a lot of traction from customers, as evidenced by back-end data analytics, as people are not turning to their bank for financial education, despite the fact the demand is there. Nowadays, it is common to see people getting their financial education from TikTok, YouTube, or family and friends. Money has become mostly invisible. It's on our phones, watches, and cards. And with all the data that banks have at their fingertips, there is no reason financial education can't make a similar move, offering a personalized service delivered directly to consumers. In this episode of Silo Busting, Theo discusses how banks need to build upon the trust that they have with their customers and deliver on the unmet need for sound, personalized financial advice.
Theo, thank you for joining us. So let's jump right into the topic at hand. So financial literacy. Working for many banks in my career, it was always a discussion, whether it was in marketing or in our community reinvestment committee or someone always talked about financial literacy, and there's always opinions on what that means. So what does it really mean?
This is not a, first of all, thank you for having me, Alex. This will not be a professional opinion of what financial literacy is, but in Theo's humble opinion is basically to be able to understand and use the skills that we have to budget and manage what we have effectively. That's my very simple way of looking at it. So it's without regards to how much assets you have, is more like, do you know how to make the most effective use of the money that you have with a healthy relationship with money?
And that sounds like a spectrum.
Yeah. To be able to budget.
But that sounds more like a spectrum, right?
And you know what I wish, though?
I wish
they would teach us that, right? Like I often talk about when people ask, what is your first money memory, right? Not including the ones that we had when we were kids and Tooth Fairy and all that. My first money memory was when I went to college the first day and you walked on campus. What was the first thing that you see, Alex? Did you remember?
I don't remember.
I remember. I saw
there were dinosaurs roaming the earth.
Dinosaurs? Okay, I'm not going to ask you what college you went to. But my school, we had a big table, a big sign-up table. You will not miss it. You cannot possibly miss it. And on there, it's like, oh, you know, sign up for the credit card, you know, because this is like representing your school. And it's your first day of school. You want to be proud of your school. So you sign up and it gives you all the T's and C's and all the terms, half of which you actually don't really understand. But you sign up anyway because, hey, this represents your school as pride. Now, do they actually teach you what would have happened if you sign up for that credit card? Do they teach you the principles of all the compound interest and late fees and all of that if you do not pay everything on time? Of course not. But that is your first money experience is, here you go. Here's a credit card. And you know, and the rest was history. And we're doing the same thing with kids nowadays. You go walk into a mall, you see Klarna, hey, sign up for this and pay him for, and all of this is so easy. You can afford anything. Go, I don't know, now people are like, what, splitting payments for a pizza? All of those. But yet, do we actually teach children how to budget what they have? Do we teach them planning? Do we teach them how much money you have versus how much you can spend or should spend? No, we don't.
Yep. Yeah. Now, and you and I, we both have small kids, and we know that that's not something that they learn. My daughter's view of money and money handling is all about Roblox and how much allowance she gets in Robux, which is the currency within Roblox. And I'm not doing a great job because she gets quote unquote paid on the 9th of the month. And by the 10th, she generally has blown her whole budget for the month on Roblox. So it is a challenge, and certainly schools are not teaching that. But, you know, banks think that they are doing something in that space. And you know, it's been always a frustration of mine that their approach has been, it's all about teaching people how to save money. And therefore, we're going to write this very long blog, 4,000 words. We'll sit in our resource page within the website. And, you know, if you start looking at the Google Analytics behind those pages, generally they have very few views. People don't go to them. They might be great resources, but they're not teaching anything to anyone because they're just not visible. Not only that, but a lot of consumers tells us that they are not going to the bank to understand how to handle their money. The majority of people don't think of their banks as providing that. Generally, they go listen to podcasts or they watch YouTube videos, they watch TikTok, they talk to their parents or their children, their aunts and uncles. They read books. There's other avenues that people use to get to some understanding of financial literacy. But the vast majority of people don't go to a bank and also don't have an advisor. So what we love to talk about, all the great things we do in the industry, most of that stuff is, you know, goes into the void.
I think that's an understatement, but I like your point about financial institutions putting the information on their website and how it is very rarely visited, to which I would question, what is the intention of them putting the information on the site? Are they doing it so they can check the box? Patio? Or are they doing it because they genuinely want to help? And recently I spotted, and this is really interesting, I spotted AARP Foundation, which is different than AARP Mothership, but Foundation had a really interesting set of information, almost like a quiz, if you will, that were teaching people the concept of fintech. What is fintech? How do you pay bills online? How do you transfer money and all of those? And has quiz in the end. I thought that was different because the pages are so new, so fresh and so refreshing. I hadn't had the time to dig into, you know, whether or not those pages were well visited. But I have to say, compared to a lot of what we see in the banks, and like you say, buried deep under many menu tree, that was different. It was nice to see.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a fintech that's actually a client of ours that does TikTok videos. It's not in the U.S. It's in another country. And what they actually have these TikTok videos that talk about how handling money and so on. And they're great. They're real short. They use language that a Gen Zer would understand. And that's their target, right? They're going after Gen Zers. These are not for boomers or even millennials. their goal is Gen Z. Well, yeah. You know, and when we look at data that we have on consumer behavior, or at least what consumers tell us, the millennials are much more comfortable with financial, with doing self-service, or using apps and so on, than Gen Zers. Gen Zers are less comfortable with technology, believe it or not, and are more likely to go to a branch. Funny enough, in some of the data from a recent survey that we did, we found that Gen Zers were pretty much at the same level of boomers of how much they like to go to a branch. And why do they go to the branch? And it is because they want to have someone in person to talk to them. And part of that is because we have not done a great job as a country to give young people an understanding of finances. And therefore, they feel like they have to go talk to a person. The least engaged of all the generations were the Gen Xers. Right, we have grown up with technology, so we are good with technology. We know how to use it, and we are more likely to self-serve. Millennials are right behind Gen Xers, but it's weird to see behaviors of Gen Zers to be kind of really different. And we generally lump young people, quote unquote, into this whole idea that they know how to do technology and therefore can do all kinds of things, including how to manage their money, right?
I like that. There are so many things I love what you just said. So A, we tend to generalize behaviors of generations, right? We say boomers are supposed to act like this. We put them in a box. Gen X, well, forget about them. No one talks about Gen X. And millennials supposed to act like this. And then Gen Zs are supposed to act a different way. And I found that fascinating because, look, and you know me, I started out looking at financial well-being of older adults. That was like 8-10 years ago. And what was fascinating about that demographic is, again, we tend to look at everyone older than 50 as one bucket.
Yeah.
And it's not, because you look at different generations of people born different eras, right after World War II, before World War II, closer to, you know, the 60s and all of that. And they all behave differently. I'm mm-hmm. turning 50 this year. And do not lump me with people with the same behavior as those that are 90s, because we're likely different. Yeah. And so to that same extent, for people who are younger than 50, we also can't just all assume they do the same thing. Wasn't the Gen Zs the one who were on TikTok and talking about stuffing cash in envelopes?
Yes. Yep.
Exactly.
Yep.
That was and big it makes trend. Sense. Yep. And you know what? I actually give cash to my kids, because that's the only way for them to actually visualize and understand how to budget. Mm-hmm. You have the pain of paying if you have to take the cash out from wallet. And I saw it firsthand with my kids when we're in Hong Kong and they use the NFC watch to pay. They don't think. They just go, beep, pay, walk away. Yeah. Whereas when we come back to the US, when they had to take cash out from the wallet, I saw them think and they stopped, which is marvelous.
Yeah,
it's awesome. So I know, you know, from us coming from fintech, we probably shouldn't talk about paper money because everyone say paper money is going to die. But you know what? There is actually good with paper money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. We actually see right now that prior to the current kind of economy weakness or whatever we're calling it, that
the C word.
Yeah, credit card balances had remained lower than in previous years or times, but now credit card balances nationwide are going back up again.
Yeah.
With, you know, the current situation that we are. And a lot of that is because, you know, we get used to the way that we live, and then, you know, next thing we know, we have lots of debt, and then we don't know where to go. And like, you know, like I said, you know, you're now going to go to the bank. We also, from a banking side, we also don't tool our customer facing employees to be able to do some of this. You know, the philosophy has been consumers know us really well as a bank, and therefore they're going to come to us because they trust us, and we're going to give them advice on how to handle money. I cannot remember the last time I heard someone at a branch say that they had someone come in to talk about how to budget. And I know it does happen. It does happen. There's always exceptions. But it's not a huge number of people who are marching into the branch to ask that. And we are also not necessarily training the tellers, the platform people, the branch managers on how to do that. Many of them know how to do it because, you know, they're in the business and so on, and they've learned. But it's not something that we are really advertising or really offering to clients. And yet we sort of expect it. And we say, well, people are going to do it because they trust us. But the reality is that trust is it's a funny word, right? What does that mean? Consumers trust banks, but I think consumers trust banks to keep the money safe, not necessarily anything else. That's very different. And so the survey that we did last year, we had banks, like 80% of people said that they trust their primary bank. And 54% of people said that they trust Apple. Apple announces a savings account and suddenly they raise $4 billion of deposits. $1 billion in deposits in 4 days. To a organization that less trusted than your primary bank. To me, that just says people are looking for more revenue through interest and are going to go to someone that they might trust a little less, but they still kind of trust them. So, you know, building this whole idea that banks are trusted and therefore we can help them is a bit of a fallacy.
I think it's more than trust, right? As you say, trust is a very interesting word. I might trust that the bank is going to stick around versus do I trust them to give me sound advice without gouging me?
Right.
Versus do I trust them enough or, you know what, it's okay, but since I get a much better return, right? Like, you know, in one of the big banks I had, I think it was like, I don't even get 0.1% interest. It was so bad that I can't even report it on my tax return. I'm like, okay, we're counting pennies in here. But Apple offers a few things, right? It offers, first of all, convenience because you have the phone with you all the time. I mean, look, what's the first thing you do when you wake up? What's the last thing you do before you go to bed? You're always on the device, good or bad. You're checking emails, you're checking your calendars, you're checking your social, you're chatting with friends, what have you. The device is never far away from you. And to be able to add the convenience of moving money, storing money, getting a little bit of interest out of it, that's absolutely appealing. But, you know, you and I talked about this. One thing I would wish Apple would do, and perhaps they are on the journey towards it, is now that they know us so well, now they have us so captivated beyond the apps and all of that, now they are steward of our money, for lack of a better word, what can they do taking all of that in to do more for us, to do more for consumers? Can they do and nudge us in the right direction the same way that they do with the health apps? Because that will be amazing. That coupled with financial literacy, you know, teaching us, nudging us the right way to help us save a little bit more, especially with cost of living crisis, inflation, and all of that pressures, that would be amazing. Like, hey, look, you're able to save a little bit this much because of this, or how about you do this, or congratulations. Like, those things, it is much better than telling me, hey, you know, here's some transaction. You spent $6 in Starbucks. Okay, great, thanks.
Yeah, so my American Express card gives me an alert every time I use the card. And I love that. But every once in a while, I get an alert. And I want it to be more than just an alert that says, you just spent $100 at Amazon. I wanted to say something else. Give me some advice. Give me some contextual advice that's very specific to that transaction. And that's the sort of thing that we in the industry can do if we had the wherewithal to do it. And what you're saying is Apple might do it before a bank will do that. And therefore, you know, we're in danger as an industry that we're going to move away from being the quote unquote trusted provider of financial services. And we're just going to be the utility, the Goldman Sachs behind the behind Apple. And I think that's the danger from an industry standpoint. If we don't engage consumers better. And the whole idea of being able to provide contextualized, personalized, individualized experiences is the promise that we should be trying to get to, given the technology that we have.
It's about, well, look, at the end of the day, it's about delivering value, right? To your point, what value are we delivering to consumers that is helpful to them? Not what we think is helpful, is what it is actually helpful for them. So, you know, recently I shared a study with you. It's from Edward Jones. Fascinating read about corrective actions that people can take. It's a toolbox of sorts. If you need to reduce your expenses, you know, what are some of the things you can think about? Reduce debts and reduce everyday expenses and, you know, get supplemental health insurance, move to a different place, et cetera, et cetera. Well, all of these are great and wonderful, but it's not personal, it's not contextual to me. How does that apply to my personal situation? And I think that's where we're missing, right? You're throwing me with all of these things that you should have been doing. Well, okay, then help me out. Create a plan for me so I can get there. Just throwing me the data doesn't help. We need the action. So we need the second part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which reminds me that, you know, when we talk about financial literacy, generally organizations think about financial literacy for people with less means, which in many cases for many banks, particularly public banks, that means not their target customers. And so, you know, it does become more of a, you know, check, you know, we did this, we met our CRA goals for having literacy out there, literacy information. But the reality is that financial literacy is for anyone and everyone, with perhaps the exception of the Elon Musk's of the world. You know, I think I laid the story before, but I interviewed a couple as part of a project, and there were a lawyer and a medical doctor married, and they were struggling financially. They were struggling because they had a very large house, they had a boat, they have brand new cars, but they could barely make ends meet. And they were very concerned that they could not put money away for their kids' college, or that they could not put money away for retirement. And they primarily said that's because we have very big student loans. And yes, they had big student loans, but they were just not able to put money away because they were living well beyond their means. And it's all about what they knew about handling money. And they felt that, hey, you know, I'm a lawyer, I'm a doctor, I'm well trained, I'm very smart. I don't need to get an advisor. I don't need to talk to a banker. I don't need this. I'll figure it out myself. And they couldn't do it. In the meantime, you know, almost the same day, I interviewed a single mom who was making very low wages, and she already had a nest egg. She already had some money invested for her kids' college, and she was very specific about what she did. And so, you know, here is someone that you would expect would need this quote unquote financial literacy. And this other couple who just clearly needed it, even though they had lots of means.
isn't it fascinating to think about, like, assumptions, right? It goes back to what we assume people know how to do and what to do. And that's one of the things I think as an ecosystem, we do often miss the boat, because we assume if you're poor, then you must not know how to manage money. If you are not, you know, at top of the ladder, well, you must not have tried hard enough. Or, God forbid, if you're a little bit overweight, ugh, you must not be taking care of yourself. And we have all kinds of people, right, coming out and say, well, you should have exercised more. You should eat healthier. You should sleep more. You should save money. Oh, and rule of thumb, you should have saved this much for retirement. Well, I think, you know what our industry needs more? Stop talking. We need to listen more. That's one thing we're not doing enough. We talk so much because we think we're all experts and we're just teaching everyone, this is what you should have done. Well, guess what? If that person is working three jobs trying to make ends meet, you don't think they would know that they probably should sleep a little bit more and eat less fast food? Pop quiz. What quote unquote food places are still open at midnight when they get off the shift? Fast food. Mm-hmm. What do you normally spot close to bus stops? Fast food. It's cheaper, is easier, it's accessible, it's still open, and it's right there for them. I often say no one choose to be poor, and no one choose to be of poor health. So, you know, let's find ways to get people to better places instead of blaming them. Don't victim shame them.
Yes. Well, Theo, thank you so much. We're out of time. It was a great conversation. We probably could go on forever, but thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
This has been Silo Busting, a podcast from EPAM Continuum. EPAM Continuum integrates business, experience, and technology consulting focused on accelerating breakthrough ideas into meaningful impact. Why do we do this? Because real opportunities aren't siloed. Thanks to Theodora Lau and Alex Jimenez for the great conversation. Cheers to Kip Pilales, our sound engineer extraordinaire, for getting this podcast recorded. Applause to Scott McAllister and Ken Gordon, our producers, for all their masterminding behind the scenes. I'm your host, Mo Banjoko. Thank you for listening.